You may be seated. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is Thursday, June 23rd, 2022. We have six cases on the calendar today, three of which are scheduled for oral argument. Two of the cases will be heard here in courtroom 200, and our last case of the day will be heard on zoom.gov. My name is Sarah Wheelock, and I am the presiding judge on a panel here with Judges Lucinda Jessen and Peter Reyes. Oral arguments are recorded by the court. The audio recordings will be available within about 24 hours on the Court of Appeals website. And with that, Marshall, will you please call the first case this morning? Counsel, as you probably know, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument, and counsel for appellant, you will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. There is a clock on the podium at the center, and you can see that. I do ask each of you to introduce yourself at the beginning of your argument and state which party you represent. You can also use the podiums that are right by you. You just won't be able to see the clock as well, and certainly I'll keep track of the time as well. So, counsel for appellant, please begin when you are ready.
Thank you. May it please the court, Timothy Kelly on behalf of the relator. This appeal should begin and end with the court holding that the interim use permit application was automatically approved under Minnesota Statute 15.99. In the Pershbagger case, this court interpreted the statutory section at issue, 15.99, subdivision 2B, and articulated what must occur when a motion to approve fails for that to qualify as an effective denial. One, there must be a failed vote, and then two, those voting against the motion must state on the record the reasons why they oppose the request. And the court in Pershbagger went on to, well, call a warning, saying to agencies, if the reasons are not stated on the record, you continue to risk that will be automatically approved. You know, the great things in these type of appeals are that you have the transcript from the board's meeting. So there's no ambiguity as to what was said or what was not said. And so obviously we have a motion to approve that failed on a 2-2 vote, two commissioners voting against the motion. One, Commissioner Mergen, clearly articulated his reasons for opposing the request. And relator submits that the other commissioner, Lenzmeyer, did not state the reasons why he was opposing the request.
Counsel, if I may just jump in here, looking at the Pershbagger case, I mean, it certainly does say the reasons need to be stated on the record, but it also says the statute doesn't restrict when they have to be stated on the record. And here, when I look at the transcript, Commissioner Lenzmeyer did, you know, sometimes cryptically, express concerns and reservations before voting against the motion. Why can't we look at those to be the reasons stated on the record?
Correct. Well, concerns and questions, like today you're asking, raising the concern or question. But if you just decided this case and said, appeal denied, I would not know why you opposed that request, because you never stated, this is the reason why I disagree with you, Mr. Kelly. And so Commissioner Lenzmeyer said, I'm not prepared to make a decision today. I'm not prepared to approve this today. But he never said, this is why I oppose that request. And so I think comments regarding potential concerns about a project, that happens, I think, in every type of public hearing regarding a conditional use permit or interim use permit, but there needs to be clarity on what the reasons are for opposing that request. And, you know, Pershbagger, I think that the timing concern was more about when do the reasons have to be stated on the record, because in Pershbagger, they had one public hearing, and then at a subsequent hearing before the...
Right, it was later, as opposed
yes.
to here, where arguably, I mean, if there are, you know, clear enough, they're earlier, right? But is why would but is there anything in Hershbagger that would say it couldn't be earlier as opposed to later?
Well, I'd say Pershbagger says that it does not have to be at the same hearing. You can do it at a subsequent board meeting as long as that is done within the 120 days.
I'm looking at the language that says the statute does not restrict when the reasons must be stated on the record, which seems to me a little broader than what you just stated.
Okay.
Am I wrong about that?
Well, taking that language to what the facts were in Pershbagger, they were talking about you were allowed to state the reasons at the next hearing as long as it's within the 120-day rule. But I think when you look at the plain text of the statute, you know, it talks about those who vote against the motion must state their reasons on the record. And so I don't think you don't know who's going to oppose or vote against the motion until it actually occurs. Now, in this case, I don't think you have to decide, does the reasons have to be stated at the time of the motion or after it or any time? Because I think the record's clear that he never articulated his reason for opposing the request. And that's what's required. There's no, you know, there's not magic words you have to say. You just have to say, I'm going to vote against this because A, B, and C. And Commissioner Mergen made it clear, he said, just for the record, I agree with the Planning Commission. And so this is not a difficult test to comply with. It's not an ambiguous test that anyone should have trouble understanding. The statute is clear, and Pershbagger make it even more clear. And there's just nothing in the record where he says, I am opposing this motion to approve for A, B, and C.
Well, but counsel, it seems like you're kind of arguing both ends, because you say there's no magic words that have to be used, and yet it sounds like you're requiring that there be some type of magic words of him saying, I oppose this because of X, Y, and Z.
He has to explain why he opposes the request, or he can say, I vote to deny this request because of A, B, and C. But general concerns about a project, you're asking there to be an assumption then that if someone has a concern about one piece of a project, that is the reason for voting against a motion to approve. And I don't think that's what the statutory language requires or what Pershbagger requires.
But he made it very, very clear what his concern was. He was concerned about the 41-year period versus the typical 25 to 30-year period. And he said, you know, several times, he said, quote, but the punchline is, I want to see us take a long view, end of life consideration. And then later on, he talked about how most of what I'm concerned with is the long term, you know, what's happening in the future. On the one end, you hear about how these things have a 30-year life. Well, effectively, they have about half that before the efficiency deteriorates to the point where perhaps the panels, meaning the solar panels, need to be replaced or should be replaced. But I don't envision them being replaced without another subsidy. So. And you know, then he said, you know, I'm not prepared to make a decision on this today, so that's why I'm asking what our timeline is. So, you know, he made it very, very clear what his concern was. His concern was on that 41-year period, which is a long time to take this agricultural, high-end agricultural land out of use. Why can't we look to those statements as to why, and then, of course, later on, then he said, you know, this horse is dead. So, I mean, I think it's far from magic language that he's using, but he's speaking in plain English. Why can't we just interpret his plain English as his concern?
I mean, he does say, and I'm quoting, most of what I'm concerned with is the long term, you know, what's happening on the future. I think that's your point, mm-hmm. Judge Reyes. Within a few sentences of him speaking, he says, but I'm not prepared to make a decision on that today. And so...
Yeah, he didn't make a decision then, but at the end, even the head commissioner seemed to acknowledge that he knew why he was and asked him, you know, do you have anything further to state? In other words, you've already made your point, your position clear. Do you have anything else to add to it? And he's like, you know, no, the source is that.
Well, I think the chairperson's comment actually references confusion because you said, well, I thought you would be making a motion to table this for another date. And that was after.
Right, but that gets into the whole issue of when you table it, then that's essentially allowing it to proceed. And they were well aware of the procedural concern, procedural issues.
Well,
their actions would have.
They would have had sufficient time to, I mean, if you table it, you can A, ask the applicant to agree to extend the deadline, or they could have had time to have another meeting where they could have taken in additional information. But the problem is, without him stating, this is why I oppose this request, then, you know, we'll obviously get into the merits of the denial. The applicant doesn't know what the main issues are. We know what the Planning Commission said, and that's what Commissioner Mergen adopted. And so that's why we've addressed all the Planning Commission findings in our brief. But I can't tell you what Commissioner Lesmeyer said was his reason for denial.
Well, I guess this goes to Judge Justin's point. We can look at this information, right? It doesn't seem that complex. It seems pretty straightforward as to what his concern is and why he's opposing it.
Yes, there are concerns. And I go back to the example. At any public hearing on this type of project, commissioners are going to express questions, concerns, ask for information. But just because you express a concern, that doesn't automatically turn it into why I oppose the request to approve the project. And it says you need to state your reasons for opposition. And it has to, you know, there needs to be some clarity on that because that restricts our ability to, you know, challenge the denial on the merits. So, you know, I'd ask you to review the transcript and find anywhere where Commissioner Lesmeyer says this is the reason why I oppose this request. Obviously, if you rule in the relator's favor on the automatic approval issue, you don't have to reach the merits. But if you do reach the merits, I also believe you should reverse because not all the reasons they gave for denial are both legally sufficient and factually supported. Every reason that's in the Planning Commission's findings, and to be clear, there's not a finding by the Planning Commission specifically on the length of the permit. All the findings relate to the alleged incompatibility with the comprehensive plan. And although the comprehensive plan may, you know, be a reason for denial, the Supreme Court's made clear in CR Investments that you can't rely on overly vague or subjective requirements in a comprehensive plan. And, you know, I think Justice Reyes referred to a concern about prime ag land. And one of the reasons they denied this request relates to a number of different policies that talk about protecting or preserving prime farmland or highly valued agricultural land. And to be clear, the record establishes that this project site does not include prime farmland. And this is not relying on just a statement or assertion by a relator. We look at the county's comprehensive plan soils map. And as county staff explain, this project site is not prime farmland as defined in the soils map. And so if an applicant cannot rely upon the county's own comprehensive plan for what is or is not prime farmland, then I don't know what they can rely upon. In addition, you have the property owners explaining that this project site contains less productive farmland and highly valued agricultural land is not defined in the ordinance or the comp plan, but you need to remember that prior to the relator applying for rezoning, this was zoned R10 by the county. And that talks about land that is neither highly valued farmland or located within in a growth area. And so it was only rezoned to facilitate this application. And so any finding that is based on prime farmland or highly valued agricultural land should be disregarded. And then, you know, I do want to address the Impact Power Solutions opinion that came out after the briefing was completed in this case. One, it's a non-precedential opinion, so it does not bind this court. Two, excuse me, there are facts that distinguish this case from that one. In that case, the panel honed in on the board's finding that a 6 solar farm in a 1 mile area was just too many, and the county had the discretion to say it's too many. That's, and I agree with that ruling, but that's what they focused on. Here, what you have in the record is the existing solar farm on the same property. This one would be adjacent to it. And then in the record, the only other solar farm is 2 miles away. There's a municipal solar garden at a high school. And so there's not this cluster that existed in Impact Power Solutions. And frankly, I respectfully submit that the panel and Impact Power Solutions interpreted the comprehensive plan incorrectly. There's a provision that talks about the primary land uses should be agriculturally oriented in combination with limited agricultural related business, solar and wind, and some other items in that list. They applied that adjective limited to everything in the list. But if you look at the provision, limited is an adjective, agricultural is an adjective, related is an adjective, and they all modify the one noun business. And so those adjectives don't apply to anything other than the list. I see my time is up.
Thank you for your argument. And you will have your 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, we turn to you. Please begin when you are ready.
Morning, members of the court. Jay Squires appearing on behalf of respondent Stearns County. I'll start out with the 15.99 issue. I think the court asked all the right questions. There was a provision added in the statute in 2003 as a result of a strange case where there was a tie vote, and the court said, well, that doesn't constitute action. So the legislature chose to fill that vacuum. There's one case that construes that provision, subdivision 2B, and that's the Pirschbacher case that is fairly extensively briefed, and I won't discuss it in great detail. I did represent the county in that case. What Pirschbacher stands for is the fact that, notwithstanding the argument of appellant in that case, there is no requirement in the statute that at the very time that the motion to approve is made that the opponent state, here's why I'm opposed to it. Pirschbacher says that isn't in the statute, and we're not going to add words to the statute. So I think, as Judge Jessen correctly pointed out, Pirschbacher stands for the proposition it can be made at any time. And that's not only after the fact, but in the course of discussion of the application, which usually is when an opponent to a land use request says, here are the concerns I have with this particular application. The statute doesn't require, looking at the statute specifically, it doesn't require that a reason given be of a certain character or ilk or be prefaced by, I am opposed to this for this reason. The statute just simply says there has to be a reason provided. It's not the prerogative of the court to add language to the statute, as appellant would suggest in this case, to require that they be prefaced in a certain way, to require that they be of a certain nature or even be legally relevant. I would submit to the court that looking at the statute, all it requires, as I mentioned, is that there be a statement of a reason. If a board member said, I oppose this motion to approve it because I don't like the applicant, that's a reason. Now, if that's the reason being reviewed, that's a separate question and goes to the merits of it. Or I don't like, I'm going to oppose this because the applicant has a beard and I hate
beard. Isn't that just, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Squires.
Yes.
But I think that that's appellant's point. If, you know, if someone were to say something like, well, I don't like the applicant, you know, and that's my reason, well, then you know what the reason is and you're able to, you know, raise concerns with it. And here they're not able to do that.
Yeah, so, I mean, they are, Your Honor, respectively, because we've briefed it, and I'd say there's two answers to that question. One, that as we discuss in our brief, that when a matter is presented to the county board, first it goes through the planning commission, and they develop all the reasons and findings to present to the board for action. So that's part of the record. As the county staff indicated in this case, and is commonly the case, they instructed the board that unless you vote to overturn the planning commission, these are the reasons. So we're not here with an appellant saying we never understood what the reasons were. That was clear. But beyond that, case law is clear that even if there are no reasons offered by a body, and occasionally, unfortunately, that happens from time to time, that courts still are able to conduct review. You just simply look into the record and make a determination about whether the record contains legally sufficient, at least one legally sufficient reason supported by some record fact. So it's just simply not a legitimate argument.
Counsel, I do want to follow up on that. My understanding of how public hearings work is that the purpose is to engage in hopefully a robust debate and discussion on something and to allow for concerns to be raised, vetted, discussed. And in the course of that discussion, people may change their minds. The commissioners may change their minds. So how do you address the fact that even if a concern was raised during the discussion portion, it wasn't identified regardless of the language or prefatory words that were used to say, this is why I'm voting no, that could have just been part of that conversation as opposed to the reason why one of the commissioners didn't state or didn't, or why they voted against it, excuse me.
Yeah, my response, if I understand your question, it's when the vote actually was taken, how do you know that the concerns that may have been expressed and the reasons for not supporting the application were on the board member's mind at that time? And I would draw us back to the statute, and I would say for the reasons we've already discussed, that's not relevant because the statute simply requires that there be a statement of reasons. Pirschbacher says it doesn't have to be at the time that the actual vote is taken. So a court's analysis and limited focus on an issue involving interpretation of subdivision 2B of 15.99, as I think the questions of this court, and again their app questions, have focused on are, is there something in the record that show that reasons were stated? And you've identified a number of them. There are others that we discuss in our brief. For lack of time, I won't discuss them, but the long-term concerns about ag land, there was a discussion about experiences with gravel pits taking out ag land, and board member Lenzmeyer said this is a repeat of that issue, and I'm concerned. All of those are reasons. Even the fact that I'm not prepared to vote yes today, i.e. I don't have enough information, is a reason. So on a number of different fronts, taking into consideration this 15.99, which the courts have consistently said is a pretty darn harsh statute and should be construed very narrowly because automatic approval is a significant issue, taking those facts into consideration, this is not a 15.99 subdivision 2B case.
So why is the discussion on the gravel pits relevant?
It's relevant because in the context of that discussion, what the board was focused on and discussing is the fact that they approved expansions of gravel pit to, in effect, take up ag lands and eat up some of the ag lands. So what Commissioner Lenzmeyer was discussing, relating back to an earlier discussion in that meeting, was this is going to be the same thing as that.
But why is it relevant in the respect of with the gravel pits? I mean, it's a much more active taking of that land versus the solar panels, where it's more preserving it, so to speak. You're not tearing up the land the way you do with a gravel pit. Sure. So I'm just questioning whether or not that's really irrelevant.
Yeah, I certainly understand you can factually distinguish the two. When you dig up all the gravel, you take away all the land, and you're probably not ever going to reestablish it for ag purposes, where the same may not be true with solar panels. But I think that you'll see the discussion at the meeting was just simply taking prime ag land out of production. So while it may not be permanent in the sense of solar panels, it may be 40 years down the road, maybe the panels will be taken out, they'll be using it again. It's still taking highly valued ag land out of production.
For a period of time.
Yes, but, correct.
But relators engage in a lot of steps to not only preserve it, but to make sure that even during that period of time, even if the land wasn't going to be used for ag purposes, it was still going to preserve the natural, like for instance, with the bees. And at first blush, it may seem, what's the big deal with bees? But that's actually incredibly important from an environmental perspective. Yeah. That you take those. And there are a lot of actions and parts of their proposal that both the board and the commissioner said, this is consistent with what we want to see. So, I mean, why isn't it an abuse of their discretion to end up denying it, given all of the steps that they took, given all of the regulations that they complied with, given the extensive, careful planning that they undertook?
Sure. I think we've segued into that's a good transition to the second part of my argument. I think your comments relate more towards review of the substantive decision,
right.
So I'll address those issues in your particular question. Certainly that's the fact that there may have been mitigating efforts made to minimize impact, to plant pollinator varieties, to add bees, all those things go into the mix of assessing whether an application meets the standards as a whole. In this case, it was an interim use permit. But there are many standards, the effect on the public health, safety, and welfare, the public good, the benefits that may arise out of it, are certainly legitimate criteria, but those aren't the issue in this case. This case is the request consistent with a comprehensive plan? So I don't disagree with any of your statements that those are things that should be looked at and are looked at. But our case deals with, is this consistent with the comprehensive plan? And we do have the benefit of the impact power case. Yes, of course, it's non-precedential, but it's a month old. It's on all fours. It deals with the Stearns County Comprehensive Plan. It upholds long case law of appellate courts that reliance on inconsistency with a comp plan is a legitimate basis for denial. It construes the exact same provisions that were at issue in this case. And those are, I'm not going to go into detail, but goals and policies in the comprehensive plan, and we discuss them in our briefs. But I want to talk about how this case, and my comments with how this case is different or like Impact Power Solutions. And I would submit that this is even a stronger case because Mr. Kelly talked about the focus on, that's different because there were a whole bunch of solar operations in that area of the county. That's not the commonality. That's not the reason the board took action in this case. The commonality deals with the characterization of the site as highly valuable ag lands that should, under the comprehensive plan, be preserved. So how is that case like our case or different? In that case, as you'll see from reviewing it, there was conflicting information about the nature of the value of the farmland at issue. Some people said, this is old scrubby stuff. They used to mine in here. It's not any good. But yet the court cited the applicant's statement saying, this is decent, productive land that I farmed in the past. And the court in Impact Power said, the county has the prerogative to decide when there's competing evidence of which to believe, and supported the county's determination that, per the comp plan, this was, in its judgment, valuable ag land that should be preserved. Our case is stronger because, in our case, there was a detailed analysis done of that relates to the value of the property using what's called a LISA scale, which stands for land evaluation site assessment, which is an analysis that right in the comp plan it says the reason we do this is to give us a sense of the value of a particular parcel of ag property. In the record, we've included the Lisa score sheet for the property, and the record indicates this site had a 72.8 rating, which just relatively is that sites 65 and above have been determined to be valuable ag land. Past projects had been denied where scores were not at that threshold. So we have, as we pointed out, we have a situation where not just anecdotal discussions about past usage of the property, we have a quantitative analysis resulting in a product that demonstrates to the county, in the county's perspective and per that analysis, that this is highly valuable property. So in that sense, our case, this case is stronger than Impact Power Solutions, because when the court reviews the decision, you do two things. Is there a legally sufficient reason for the decision? Here, the answer is yes. Impact Power Solutions says yes, and there's no reason that you should say that that panel was wrong. Once you determine there's a legally sufficient reason, the second part of the court's inquiry is there some evidence in the record to support that? So in Impact Power Solutions, they relied on that competing evidence and said it's not our prerogative as a court to interject ourselves in a local decision. Here we have much more concrete, significant, substantial evidence to support the board's conclusion that this is highly valuable land. It's not consistent with our comp plan goals and policies to preserve those. Yes, we acknowledge there's a role for solar in our county in the ag areas. They call it limited. But this piece of property, this is not the site for it. This is highly valued land that we intend to protect in Stearns County.
If I may, Mr. Squires, take
before your time ends,
take you back to the first issue and Pershbacher. You've been talking about a non-presidential opinion, so my question is, whichever way we come down on the first issue in this case, you would be thinking about a presidential opinion in this case, given that Pershbacher deals with reasons on the record afterwards, and we are here talking about whether we should be able to consider ones, or at least concerns stated before the vote. Could you, and perhaps on rebuttal, both of you could address that for me?
Well, Pershbacher was reported, so that's right. A reported decision.
That's what I'm just saying, this is a different situation.
Yeah, I would submit to the court that Pershbacher, that there is no new novel theory that requires you to issue a presidential opinion, because I think Pershbacher is clear, isn't limited, as Mr. Kelly suggested, to only after the fact. I think it's even better to be able to look to the contemporaneous discussion during the course of the meeting leading up to the vote. I mean, that's fresh stuff. Courts are always concerned about after-the-fact justification and efforts. So I think Pershbacher is a worse scenario if you have concerns about compliance with the statute. So I think it's a better situation. But I think Pershbacher stands on its own and doesn't require this court to issue a new precedential decision to clarify that. I think it's already clear. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And counsel for appellant, we turn to you for the last word. You may begin when you are ready.
A couple things on Pershbacher, and I'm just looking at the headings. And one of them is, a board should state with clarity and completeness the facts and conclusions essential to its decision so that a reviewing court can determine from the record whether the facts furnish a justifiable reason for its action. Excuse me. And so what we're talking about here is clarity. And if you look at record document 14, here's what Stearns County sends out and says. Here's the reasons for denial. Members voting against the motion concurred with the Planning Commission's findings of fact. That's not accurate. There's not one statement from Commissioner Lenzmeyer saying, I concur with the Planning Commission. If you look at the written reasons for denial, there's nothing about this proposed term is too long. And so the county didn't even understand what the reasons for denial were, because we know what is said in that letter is not accurate.
Well, but you did have one commissioner who did rely on the planning commission?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
That did rely on the planning commission's statements, and then the other one who focused more on the time period.
Well.
So, I mean, we're not just limited to looking at what they sent out later.
Correct, but there has to be, clarity is the whole point here. And so we shouldn't be debating about, Mr. Kelly, why do you think Commissioner Lenzmeyer voted against the motion to approve? I don't know. And it has to be a statement by the person voting against the motion. It can't be something in the board's packet. Certainly can't be a staff letter, so it has to be verbalized by that person. And I think if you look at the record, it's clear that he did not state his reasons for opposing. With respect to the merits, it's undisputed this project site is not highly valued agricultural land or prime agricultural land. The comp plan soils map says that. It was previously zoned R10, which says that is land that's not highly valued agricultural land.
But when we look at the LISA score, is what's well over 70, and it's not uncommon for properties with a LISA score over 65 to be denied,
Excuse me. The LISA score talks about and asks, this is according to the comp plan, whether the proposed project has taken the LISA score into consideration and has taken the appropriate steps to preserve prime ag soils for future agricultural activities. So when I read that, I say, well, there are no prime soils to preserve, so the LISA score doesn't apply. The LISA score talks about managing non-farm rural residential development. We're not developing anything. And I think it's somewhat hypocritical where they try to make this project site to be this prime ag land when it's not in the record, and also when it was previously zoned for residential development. And the county ignores, and I think you referenced these things, how this project, preserves the agricultural soil, right? It may not be prime, but preserves it.
I'm not sure if they really ignored it, because I mean, looking at all the information, they definitely seem to acknowledge, and even the letter that you referenced highlights things that are positive in terms of the proposal, but also things that are negative. So it does seem to be a balanced approach, which ultimately, isn't this really a question of whether or not they abuse their discretion? Even if we would have made a different decision, we give great deference to them acting in this quasi-judicial role, and it's really not our role to second guess as long as there's information in the record. And it was a split vote, 2-2. So this is a close call. Why don't we just, given our standard of review, shouldn't we give deference to that decision?
Because all their decisions arise from the premise that this was prime agricultural land or highly valued agricultural land. And that is not supported in the record. And we're relying on information from the county. And so that's where it has to be a legally sufficient reason and also factually supported. Thank you.
Thank you for your argument, and thank you to both counsel and parties for presenting the case today. This has been very helpful. We will take the case under advisement and issue an opinion within the statutory deadline. Thank you.
Thank you.